Welcome to this Thursday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Thank you for tuning in here on St. Patrick's Day. On today's episode, we start with a report with Taylor Chalstrom on information of different types of soil health tests that are available to growers. And then you'll hear information about controlling the true bug pests in the spring. The show will start right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Soil health testing can guide management decisions and measure progress after implementing new practices. Many commercial and university labs provide soil quality panels to assess a wide array of metrics influencing the soil's production capacity and environmental impact. Metrics included in these assessments vary between labs, but they all aim to include physical, chemical, and biological components. Some of the biological indicators include combustible soil organic matter, water-soluble organic carbon, and soil respiration. Many of these biological indicators must be viewed together to accurately interpret field conditions. Helier Ag's Dr. Carl Wyant rejoins the show to discuss some of the newer soil biological tests that labs are offering and how a grower can choose which test suits their need.
The soil health space, you know, from grower interest and advisor interest, this space has been growing, and laboratories are following suit and offering more soil health packages. One of the challenges with testing for soil health is that there's a whole bunch of metrics you can actually look at. And that's been a challenge in the space. And that's where I think pairing up with your favorite laboratory or talking with your crop advisor who has a lot of sampling experience, they can direct you to the lab. Usually it's a local or regional lab that's really gone out and developed these soil health that are tests that are great for that region, those soils, that climate. And so instead of pigeonhole one or two tests, I'd rather encourage the listeners to call up their lab or call their advisor and say, hey, what's our local lab doing and how do I get involved with their testing program?
Right now in the industry, Dr. Wyant said it's a bit of a mix of both of labs that do and do not offer soil health biological tests.
Every time I do a talk on soil health or one of these podcasts, you know, I get a call from a laboratory that wants to get started in the soil health space because they have all these resources for testing soil from a physical and chemical level. And if they added that biological component, that would really complete their suite of services. So there's definitely more labs coming on board. So for those of you who are listening that are interested in soil health sampling, but maybe you've been frustrated because your local lab doesn't have the service, just wait a little bit and it's sure to come on board and really, I think, become a one-stop shop for those growers that are looking for nutrient information on their soils, physical characterization like pH and soil organic matter. And now they'll be able to add a soil health component to their current database.
Growers can call their labs, submit their tests, and get the results back. But what happens when they see the results? What are they seeing on the paper? Wyant said there's typically two outcomes, one less ideal and one more ideal.
One is a page full of numbers. You have the test, whether it's active carbon or an aggregate test or soil protein or a Solvita CO2 burst test. If it's just a page full of numbers, That's a lab that needs to improve how they're explaining the data to you as a reader and as a customer. The more preferred outcome is that those numbers come with an interpretation, low, medium, high, do this, do that, some sort of direction that you can take from the information and start tweaking your management practices for your soil. So I say that's a great question to ask your lab. Not only are you offering soil health tests, but do they come with an actionable interpretation? Because that's where some growers have been frustrated as well. It's just page full of numbers. Now what?
If a grower still doesn't understand some of the results from their tests, the first step should be going back to the lab to consult again.
A lot of these labs, many of these labs that have been in the soil health space, have been able to generate regionally calibrated interpretations. So it's really tuned in with what the soil health scores are in that region. And that's been a lot of use. Another great resource is a crop advisor, someone that you trust who is familiar with reading these samples, who can interpret the information and help you derive some actionable items from it. And then the last resource is, if you want to get on Google, you know, type in Cornell Soil Health. And if you type that in, that'll take you to a webpage that Cornell University runs. And they have this a PDF manual you can download that's, you know, the guide to soil health metrics, along with some interpretation. I will give the listener just a little caveat. A lot of their interpretation is tuned to the Northeast United States and that farm ground. So it doesn't exactly line up with what we're dealing with out west, but what the tests are, what they are looking for, what they're actually testing, that's explained in excellent detail. And it's a PDF that you could actually download and have it on your phone or have it on your laptop for free.
That was our first segment of the day. Now we'll hear from Jalendra Rajal about monitoring for Hemipteran true bug pests in the spring for almond and pistachio. Integrated pest management is all about utilizing pest monitoring and scouting information to make informed pest management decisions. Monitoring for insects, including Hemipteran true bug pests, is a crucial part of almond and pistachio IPM during the spring season. Some of the smaller true bug pests can be lethal to pistachio, but to pistachio and almond, it's the larger true bug pests that are the problem. These include leaf-footed plant bug, native stink bugs, and invasive stink bugs.
In terms of the larger bug, and are more common, I would say, for the pistachio in mid to late season. Although the leaf-footed bug can arrive anytime in April and then cause some level of damage and cause nut drop. But the green stink bug or any other red soldier stink bug or the conspiracy stink bug, these are the native stink bug. They can usually present in mid to late season, like in May through, you know, even August, September in pistachio case, and can cause damage in pistachio. So it's kind of like separated by, you know, smaller bug, more of concern in early part of the season, and then the relatively bigger stink bug type of insect that cause damage in mid to late season in pistachio. If you looked at in almonds, as I mentioned, that the smaller bugs that I described for the pistachio are not too much of concern, although they may be present in almond orchard. In the weeds or grasses and vegetation nearby, but they would not do any significant economic damage in early in almonds, except that in the last couple of years we have seen these smaller type of bug, the false chinch bug, which come especially for the younger trees when the trees are 1 year or 2 year young trees. And in the summer, when all the vegetation and weeds are dried up, in that case, these bugs can move into these trees and feed on randomly on the, you know, the smaller twigs and branches and in a big and high number. So that can really impact the growth of the tree, and they even sometimes, you know, kill the tree. So especially when we have this drought or no rain condition early part of the season, because of that, there is the vegetation dry up early. These false chinch bug insect can be a problem in almonds and can be the same thing in pistachio, can be the same thing in even walnuts too.
That was UCCE Area IPM Advisor Jalendra Rajal. Monitoring for Hemipteran true bug pests in almond pistachio differ both based on the fact that there's two different crops and also that there's small and large true bug pests.
When you think about the monitoring for the smaller bugs, so where they come from, right? So these smaller bugs are not actually the, you know, sort of pest of these tree crops in general. They feed on the weeds, they feed on the grasses, vegetation nearby, or whatever out there, like riparian area. If we have those a lot in that area, they primarily feed on those, and sometimes they feed on the crop also. So in that case, I think if for the smaller bug, the strategy I would say would be monitoring not just the trees with the visual monitoring or beating trace sampling. These are the common way we can identify the presence of the bugs, and of course we can look at the fruit damage and see the whether any significant damage causing by the bugs by sampling the fruit. But also for the smaller bug, it is also critically important to look at the vegetation, right? The weeds and grasses and nearby or in between the rows. Those vegetation host these smaller bugs. So sampling those in addition to the tree would be a better idea for identifying the smaller bugs and identifying their presence and their density and that kind of thing. I wanna also mention one note here is that, you know, these smaller bugs are always present in an orchard, right? So no matter what orchard you're talking about, tree fruits, tree nuts, but whether they are consistently present in the during the period when the fruits are susceptible, that's what it is. It is important to pay attention consistently in high number. If that's the case, then it might need some sort of treatment in pistachio. But if you see one or two or five, you know, in your 10 or 15 sweep nets that you're doing, then that may not be a significant number. I mean, they are there. They feed on the vegetation, maybe feed on some fruits, but may not cause economic damage. So that's another thing that we need to think about when we're talking about the IPM management, is that what is critically important, right? So do you want to treat that all the time whenever you see the bug, or you need to have a certain level where you say, well, now I think that it caused economic damage.
Monitoring for large bugs in almond and pistachio will have more or less similar techniques with very subtle differences.
None of these bigger bugs, including leaf-footed bug and native stink bug, we don't have any traps that we can effectively use. So really, it really depends on the, you know, kind of PCH eyes pretty much, where they can basically visit into orchard in the springtime, do the visual monitoring in the area where they likely see the stink bug based on their previous experience, or leaf-footed bug based on their previous experience. And those are mostly in the edges, in the orchard borders, where it's bordering with the riparian area or open field. Those are the area that we want to look first and do the visual sampling. Also, in the last couple of years, at least the last season that we did a project with the Almond Board funded project, where we're looking at 2021 different orchard and sampling for the hemipteran pest using these different techniques. And we found that in addition to the visual sampling, if you do the beating trace sampling and if the insects are present there, you can get a good sense of whether these native stink bugs are present there in the trees or not too. So that would be another additional way to look at it. But lack of these trapping methods or pheromones or lures, it becomes really difficult to know exactly the population in the orchard. So that's one of the things that we need to kind of work on in the future to at least to have some sort of estimate of the population in the orchard and figure out ways to sort of kind of determine the economic threshold or any kind of threshold that can be helpful in making decisions. Right now, for example, if you see one stink bug or, you know, green stink bug in July, let's say, or, you know, one leaf-footed bug or two leaf-footed bug in the spring, like in April in almonds, that pretty much many cases that triggers the insecticide spray. because how many out there, we don't know, right? So there is not better way to quantify the population there. It doesn't mean that, you know, if there are a couple of insects present, then we need the treatment. It's more of we don't know how many there. So I think that's also kind of goes into the sort of the pest control advisors risk analysis, kind of tentative risk analysis, where you look at, okay, what is the problem in the last year? What other sources out here where I'm seeing this just one or two random insects, or is it kind of more like consistent? Also, do I see some of the damaged insect, the damaged nuts also, right? The feeding damage you see there. So those are the couple of things that you need to consider. So it's more of the sort of combination of various things, experience, and doing due diligence in terms of their activity in the orchard is the best way to go at this point.
We'll cover part two of this segment on Friday's episode, where we'll talk about management of these hemipteran pests after monitoring. That wraps up our segments for today. Here's Lori Boyer with regional and national agriculture news after this break.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In regional agricultural news, Congressman David Valadao has voted in support of the fiscal year 2022 appropriations package, which provides $1.5 trillion in discretionary resources across the 12 fiscal year 2022 appropriations bills. Congressman Valadao, a member of the House Appropriations Committee, secured several wins for the Central Valley in the annual spending package, according to information from his office. Congressman Valadao submitted several community project funding requests. Of those that pertain to California agriculture are $3 million to rehabilitate the 10 miles of the Avenue 95-96 farm-to-market corridor between Tarabella and Pixley within Tulare County to improve goods movement, shorten travel times, and improve air quality. And $3 million to the Community Action Partnership of Kern for the Kern Food Bank expansion to better respond to food insecurity and provide increased support and assistance to some of the poorest communities in Kern County. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has announced the winners of two national competitive efforts to support transitions to cleaner school buses, the 2021 American Rescue Plan Electric School Bus Rebates, and the 2021 Diesel Emissions Reduction Act School Bus Rebates. The two rebate efforts total approximately $17 million in combined funding nationwide for schools and bus fleet owners to replace older, high-polluting diesel school buses. In the Pacific Southwest, EPA is awarding a total of $1.5 million towards new school buses in Arizona, California, and Hawaii. Replacing these buses will improve air quality in and around schools and communities, reduce greenhouse gas pollution, and better protect children's health overall. Protecting the health of children and fighting climate change are top priorities for EPA in the Pacific Southwest, as well as across the country, according to EPA Pacific Southwest Regional Administrator Martha Guzman. She says these rebates will fund cleaner school buses that will help to protect the health of children and the communities living and working near schools and bus routes. Since 2001, EPA school bus rebates have awarded or are in the process of awarding over $73 million to replace more than 3,000 old diesel school buses. The program will also prioritize projects that help achieve the goals of President Joe Biden's Justice 40 initiative, which aims to ensure that federal agencies deliver at least 40% of benefits from certain investments to underserved communities. Brighter Bites, a Houston-based nonprofit providing under-resourced families with fresh produce and nutrition education, received a $1.5 million grant from the Walmart Foundation to expand programming in communities throughout the country. The grant will support Brighter Bites' project, Build a Better Tomorrow for Our Families, by creating communities of health throughout increasing access to fresh food and nutrition education equitably across neighborhoods and participating cities. Currently, Brighter Bites serves over 30,000 school children and their families across 148 schools in Houston, Dallas, Austin, the Washington, D.C. metro area, New York City, Salinas, California, Southwest Florida, and Los Angeles. Brighter Bites will use the granted funds to establish new partnerships with food banks, community partners, additional local funders, and school districts through the 2023 to 2024 year. The funds will also be utilized to hire staff and other resources necessary for expansion into other cities. By broadening its national scope, Brighter Bites will increase the impact Compacta currently provides among families living in neighborhoods and communities defined as food deserts. As the Supreme Court looks to hear a crucial wetlands case later this year, over 200 House members have called on the Biden administration to drop its current rulemaking to revise the definition of the waters of the United States. For almost two decades, rural communities, businesses, and industries who rely on clean water have been trapped in political and legal limbo, according to a letter signed by 201 House members, including House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy, a Republican from California. The letter details why the Environmental Protection Agency and Army Corps of Engineers should not move forward with their plans to replace the Trump-era navigable waters rule.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The agricultural economic outlook for 2022 remains solid. Courtney Kelly, a senior economist with the Federal Reserve Bank, says while things look good on a surface, there will be things to watch out for this year.
Very strong conditions overall, but on the other hand, a sharp increase in production costs are weighing on expectations for 2022. And so on the surface, everything looks really good, very strong. There could be, you know, little drips in the agricultural economy in the form of input costs that could start adding pressure moving forward. And so ag credit conditions, like I said, are strong and have been supported by high commodity prices and strong demand for U.S. ag products, both domestically and internationally.
He says rural bankers are concerned about risks this year.
Ag lenders do continue to express concerns related to higher input costs, weak loan demand, and severe drought in some portions of the country. So adding just a little bit of that pressure to what has really been one of the strongest periods for the ag sector in some time.
Kelly calls the current agriculture outlook for 2022 a paradox.
It's very interesting to see this juxtaposition or paradox of really strong conditions, but also concerns about inflation, higher input costs. So farm balance sheets are strong. There's a willingness to spend farm working capital, but higher input costs are an issue, lack of things to buy. And so that's been a constraint. Drought still seems to be a significant issue in a lot of parts of the country, both the north and western United States.
Again, Courtney Kelly with the Federal Reserve Bank. In a statement this week, Bayer says it is supporting colleagues impacted by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The company is prioritizing the safety of 700 colleagues in Ukraine and will continue to provide them and their families with financial aid, shelter, and evacuation assistance. Bayer is stopping all non-essential business in Russia and Belarus while ensuring continued access to health and agricultural products. This includes suspending all advertising and other promotional activities, halting capital investment projects indefinitely, and not pursuing any new business opportunities. However, for essential health and agriculture products, Bayer says, as a life science company, they have an ethical obligation in every country they operate in. Withholding essential health and agriculture products from the civilian populations, like cancer or cardiovascular treatments, health products for pregnant women and children, as well as seeds to grow food, would only multiply the war's ongoing toll on human life, according to Bayer. USDA's latest look at the dairy industry is forecasting a record high all milk price. USDA Ag News reporter Stephanie Ho.
With dairy, one story in USDA's March WASDE report is record high prices.
And the all milk price was raised $1.50 per hundredweight to $25.05 per hundredweight, and that would be a new record compared to the previous record, which was achieved in 2014.
World Board Chair Mark Jekanowski calls the increase significant.
It's a pretty simple story, but an interesting one too. Reduced our production forecast again this month, and that reflects again what we're seeing in the data, both lower cow numbers and reduction in the growth in milk per cow.
He adds that milk production is down from last month and also year over year.
We raised our dairy prices kind of across the board, cheese, butter, non-fat, dry, and dry whey. Again, it just reflecting the prices we're observing, and that's fully consistent with the lower production forecast and strong demand.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The American Farm Bureau Federation wants to help rural entrepreneurs move their company forward. Farm News reporter Michael Clements tells us companies can now apply for the Ag Innovation Challenge.
The American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, is seeking entrepreneurs to apply online for the 2023 Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge. Emma Larson, AFBF Director of Industry Relations, encourages rural entrepreneurs to apply.
The Ag Innovation Challenge is a national business competition that showcases U.S. startups that are developing innovative solutions for American farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. Applications are open now through April 29th, and we will be announcing the top 10 semifinalist teams on September 13th. And the winner will be receiving $50,000 in prize money and some bragging rights as well.
Participants receive what Larson calls an invaluable experience.
They do receive one-on-one mentorship from Cornell University and other incubators. They gain national exposure. They're able to network with other agribusinesses, the rural business investment community, as well as Farm Bureau membership. So understanding how their innovation impacts folks at the farm gate level and making sure that their business addresses challenges that farmers and ranchers are facing.
Larson says the challenge also helps rural communities.
These businesses are able to take this prize money and invest it into their business that will help create jobs, help stimulate the local economy. So it's a really great thing that Farm Bureau has been involved in, and look forward to seeing which businesses we can feature in 2023.
Learn more and apply online at fb.org/challenge. Michael Clements, Washington.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.